Hey everyone, and welcome to the Bama Blend. My name is Tyler Shibish. I am a junior from O'Fallon, Illinois. I'm a news media major who's concentrating in sports media. I'm joined by my lovely co-hosts.
Matt Nash, that is who I am. I was born in Huntsville, Alabama. I am currently a junior here at the University of Alabama. And my major is also news media with a specialization in sports.
And my name is Joshua Ragsdale. I am a sophomore from Pelham, Alabama. I'm a news media major and a sports media concentration, and also throwing a little history minor in there too for fun. So excited to be here.
Okay, and today we are joined by the lovely Katie Windham. And Katie, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Like you said, I'm Katie. I'm a senior at Alabama. I'm from Montgomery, a big Auburn town. Kind of broke the mold, came to Alabama.
Yes, there you go.
So I'm on the gymnastics beat for the Crimson White, but I've also worked the Tuscaloosa News and cover a little football and volleyball. And then I also do work for the AP covering Alabama basketball a little bit. But mostly covering Alabama gymnastics.
Okay. So do you want to tell us a little bit about the Alabama gymnastics team, specifically this year?
Yeah. So this year, Alabama gymnastics is currently ranked sixth in the country based on average score. The season started out a little rocky. They lost first meet of the year to Auburn. It was only the second time they'd lost to Auburn in the last 40 years. So fans...
I did not realize that.
Fans were a little upset. Especially after how last season ended. They didn't make the finals for the first time in a while. But really, the meet at Auburn was going well. And then the last rotation, Alabama had two girls fall on beam, which means that they have to count a fall, which makes your overall score a lot lower. So they probably would have won if not for that. And then the next meet was also a loss against Oklahoma, but they scored a 197.4, which is higher than any score they got all of last season. So fans are a little frustrated with the loss, but you could see improvement right away because they have a strong freshman class. And then they've kind of been building off that every week. The next 2 weeks they didn't get above a 197, but they did get a big road win at LSU. And I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but it was the first time in a while that a team has gone into LSU and picked up a win.
Since 2013, actually, was the last time. I think it was like 18
It was the last time for Alabama, but for any – it had been a long time in a while that LSU lost to anybody at home. Okay. So
LSU's just that good at home?
Yeah.
Wow.
LSU's like kind of our gymnastics rival, aren't they, really?
Lately, it's been LSU. It used to be back in the day, Georgia. I don't know if y'all have ever seen the ESPN documentary. It's like Sarah and Suzanne, because Alabama and Georgia would often win the national championship in gymnastics, but lately Florida and LSU have kind of been the top dogs in the SEC. So that was a big momentum win for the team. It was their first like outright win of the season, and then this past Friday against Missouri in the Power of Pink meet, which is a big deal for Alabama gymnastics, was started by the old coach Sarah Patterson. They scored a 197.55, which was the highest score since 2017. So it was a really big meet for them, and they also picked up the win.
Yeah, I didn't realize that Georgia was so good at gymnastics, but then I was doing a little research beforehand, and they have 10 national championship wins. Because I know Alabama's number 4 all-time with six. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we're behind UCLA, Georgia, and then I don't know who's second.
UCLA.
They have the most national championships in, like, every sport, it seems like. Like, basketball.
Especially nowadays.
Like, well, I mean, those California athletes, they get you.
I can understand basketball because, they've had some of the most legendary people and coaches come through there. Yeah. But in terms of gymnastics, I am completely uneducated.
Well, UCLA currently has Kyla Ross, who was on that, I think, the 2016 gold medal winning Olympic team. She was a gold medal winner. And there's someone else on their team that was, she may have got Madison Kokin, if that's how you say her name. She was on the Olympic team too, and she competed for UCLA. So they've had some Olympic quality help the last few years. But Alabama has Shallon Olson, who is on the Olympic team for the Canadians. So
I'm curious though. We've had like some Olympic level athletes come into the gymnastics program. Is that how long have you been covering the gymnastics beat, too? I guess it'll tie into that.
I've just been on it, like, actually for coverage for a paper since January, but covered it a little bit for a class last year.
So have you, like, is it at all interesting to interact with these, like, young superstar athletes already? Like, they're 16 years old competing for gold medals in the Olympics and stuff while I'm 16 watching them on TV.
That is a crazy.
You know, like, what is that like to talk with them?
It is pretty crazy that a lot of them have been on the spot, like in the spotlight, since they were so young. So a lot of them are actually pretty well trained in talking to the media, because, you know, I'm sure y'all, if y'all have ever interviewed people in other sports, it's like pulling teeth, like getting answers out of them, but they're all pretty used to talking in front of the media, and they're used to competing on a big stage, because the first meet this year against Auburn, even though Alabama lost, they had three freshmen in the lineup, Makari Doggett, Luisa Blanco, and Ella Burgess, Ella Burgess and Luisa just joined the team in January, so they hadn't even compete, like they hadn't been here in the fall to train, and then they were put out on competition floor like first meet of the year.
Really?
So because of their high level, like, and Makari Doggett was on the U.S. Junior Olympic team, so because of their high level training before they even get to college, like a lot of them are ready to compete right away. They don't really have to face the freshman hump that a lot of other sports do.
That is really impressive. So is there like a kind of a golden age for like gymnastics people? Like what age gap is their prime per se? Like, for instance, in the NBA, it's 26 to 31. Is it, like, 16 to 22, or what age is that really at?
It's probably around that. Most, by the time that they're a senior in college, their body has been through so much because they've been doing it for so long. Like, I know a lot of the girls, well, most of them went to high school and then would compete hours and hours or train hours and hours at the gym every week. But a lot of gymnasts are homeschooled so that they can spend so much time on gymnastics. So by the time they reach the end of their college career, like, that's the end for them. Because, like, for example, the Olympians that competed at the Olympics but now compete in college, like, there's really nothing after college gymnastics. There's no, like, pro necessarily. Most of them, like, because they compete in the Olympics so young, like, college is kind of the end of their career. But they're still going strong even when they've hit that 22, even if they've been competing from when they're young. But that's kind of like the end of the age range for them.
So, go ahead.
What do they go into then after their college careers? I know that Dana Duckworth, you know, player go to coach. Do a lot of them kind of follow that career path? They just go back and coach wherever they can, or is there an alternative?
I think like a lot of sports, gymnasts choose to get back into the sport. Like, for example, this Friday, Alabama is competing against Arkansas, and they're coached by 24-year-old Jordan Weber, who was on the 2012 Olympic gold medal winning team. So, which I don't know for sure. I tried to find some stats this week, but I would assume that has to be one of the youngest head coaches in D1.
That's 24 years old.
That's absurd.
So a lot of them, I think, do get back into gymnastics and coaching because Dana Duckworth, obviously, is a former Alabama gymnast, and then Asia Sims is one of the assistants at Alabama. She, former Alabama gymnast. But then I know a lot of them go into other careers in sports, like SIDs, you know, management, stuff like that. So I think it kind of differs personally, but a lot do get back into the sport. Most coaches in gymnastics were former gymnasts.
Okay. Say that's, that's probably like a big help, I imagine, because, you know, if you weren't a gymnast, I imagine it's like it's hard to kind of get a grasp on what's actually going on, what these girls are going through,
right,
and stuff like that. So that sounds like it's a tremendous help to have gone through that already, gone through the struggle, know what they're like as people, mm-hmm, like what they're happening, and the fact that they're 16 and 17 years old, it's absurd. It just blows my mind that someone can play at such a high, or perform, I guess, at such a high level at that age. Out of this world to me.
Well, also, you mentioned the Arkansas meet, which is tonight, I believe you said. And then,
a few hours.
Yeah, I also saw it was alumni night.
Yes.
So what does that entail? Is it just like former Alabama gymnasts come back and be honored? Or?
Yeah, tonight they're having alumni night and back to the 80s. Or I love the 80s night. So because Alabama, I know they won at least one national championship in the 80s in gymnastics, maybe two. But in the email we got from Gymnastics SID this week, he said it's alumni night with more than 60 members of the gymnastics family making their way back to Coleman Coliseum for the meet. So I think they'll just be kind of probably honored before the meet and then watch the meet, obviously. And the coaches and gymnasts that I talked to this week said it's just important for them to see those people that meant so much to the program and what they did. And then they, like you were saying with the coaches, these alumni know what these girls are going through and the pressure they have on them. And so it's cool for the girls to get to talk to them.
Okay. Yeah, it was just one in the 80s, but then they won in 91 as well. So close enough, I think. So then you're saying over 60 people come back? So is it like a super tight-knit thing? Like, I know Alabama football, they always honor like former football teams. Yeah. You think it's like a same thing where they have this kind of bond being former Alabama gymnasts?
I think it is. And because for the longest time, football and gymnastics were the only team sports with national championships. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, there's softball, men's, and women's golf. But there's there's a big fan base for Alabama gymnastics, and so I think it also has created a big family and community. They have a lot of people that support them. Also tonight, it says, in addition to just being regular alumni night, they're going to honor the 1990 and 2000 SEC championship teams as they celebrate their 30th and 20th anniversaries. So I think Alabama gymnastics, there's definitely a big family component to it too.
So I actually have a quick question. So how large is a normal gymnastics team? Like how many, like say we have 60 people coming back, how is that multiple team worth of people?
I probably should know this. I don't know for sure how many girls are on the roster. I'd say it's somewhere in like the 16 to 20 range.
So we've got like over three whole teams worth of people coming back in.
Yeah. Wow. It's probably like decades worth of
girls. That is awesome.
Normally a lot of like really recent people that just graduated that want to come back. And then also I think because these two teams are coming back, a lot of those girls, I'm sure that's kind of contributing to the number.
That is so cool.
Can you go into a little bit about like the history of the gymnastics program? You know, we've got one of the most legendary coaches in gymnastics with Sarah Patterson, and now we've got Dana Duckworth. Was the program started with Patterson first, or was it go back even further?
I think maybe like I don't know for sure. I've watched that like the Suzanne and Sarah documentary thing. But I know Bear Bryant, like, hired Sarah Patterson, and she was super – maybe she may have been in, like, the 20 – you know, we're talking about how young Jordan Reaper is. I think she was around that age when she started. But it pretty much – if it didn't start with her, it was around her. And then as soon as her and her husband, David Patterson, they co-coached, retired Dana Duckworth, who was an assistant under them, took over. So this is her sixth year under the Pattersons. Alabama Gymnastics won six national championships, like we've kind of already touched on. And then Dana's first year, they won the SEC championship. And as far as I know, they haven't since then. But I'd say this season, Florida's really good. I think they're second in the country right now by average, second or third. But this year, this squad has a really good chance of winning the SEC championship, I'd say.
It's a young squad, too, right? Like you said, three freshmen, right, like who just showed up in January, started in their first meet. So, I mean, that's got to feel pretty good for the future of the program,
exactly,
too.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of good things to look forward to for this team because they have the three freshmen, Shallon Olson, who's the Olympian, is only a sophomore. You also have Jincy Givens competing on bars, that's a sophomore. There's the three seniors, Shay Mahoney, Maddie Desch, and Winter Childers, who have all been really good leaders for this team. Shay Mahoney competes on three events normally. Maddie Desch has been competing on floor, and she'll sometimes compete on vault. And then Winter's normally only been competing on bars, but that just shows that it's been young girls, underclassmen, that have been stepping up and will continue to for this team this season and into the future. The future is definitely looking bright for Alabama Gymnastics.
I love to hear it.
Yeah, I also love to hear that. So one kind of random question that I had was I was looking through the schedule, and then including tonight, the last like four meets of the regular season, three of them are at Alabama, correct? So just how important like is something like home court advantage? Because I know in football you hear about it, basketball you hear about it, but
right,
how important is it for gymnastics meets?
Gymnastics is so different than other sports because what you do literally does not affect the other team at all. You know, coaches in all sports love to say, you know, we're just focusing on ourselves. Like, we're just focusing on what we need to do. But, like, in gymnastics, it's literally true because you can't determine if a girl falls off the beam or not on the other team or what score she's going to get from the judges. But in gymnastics, home court advantage is kind of big in that you do have the crowd behind you, so it can kind of pump you up, especially once they get to that last rotation of floor. The crowd's normally really into it. And then also, typically, it's well known across gymnastics that judges generally score the home team higher, whether that's deserved or not. A lot of people like to debate about that. But in general, the home team scores higher. So that's definitely, so far, Alabama's two highest scores, the 197.4 and 197.55, have both happened in Coleman Coliseum. So okay, they'll be looking to build on that against Arkansas tonight. But also, there's been an issue in gymnastics the last few years with leotard bias, which is some of the top teams like Oklahoma and UCLA, just because of the leotard they wear, they get higher. People think they get higher scores because of just people see that name on them and know that they're like, there's a video going around Twitter a few weeks ago of Oklahoma has this incredible gymnast named Maggie Nichols when she was in Tuscaloosa. She scored a 10 on at least one event, and then like a 9.95 and 9.975 on another event. There's a video from her the week before where she like almost fell off the beam, and then one judge still gave her a 10. And like, that's a pretty major, that should be a pretty major deduction. So, yeah. Home teams generally get scored higher, but then also in recent years, there's been some teams that just like kind of, it kind of seems that no matter what they do, they get scored higher.
Okay, so I know, at least I think I know, that in terms of gymnastics, the events that you do are based upon whether you're home or away. Is that correct?
You do the same four events are done every night, like, but the order. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you're home, you start on vault, then go to
bars.
Bar, then beam, then
you get
floor.
To end on floor.
Okay, so is there any advantage to, say, ending on floor instead of ending on beam?
That's true. That is another advantage of being a home team, is you get to end on floor, because beam, I would say, is the most stressful event generally for the gymnast, because you're literally doing flips on a 6-inch piece of, you know, beam. So the other events, you have more room for error. Like on beam, there's literally less room for error. So the pressure's really on if you're ending on that event. You're more likely to fall on that event than others, I'd say. Especially last season, Alabama struggled a lot with falls on beam. So if ending on beam is a challenge, like in the first meet when Alabama lost to Auburn, they had two falls on beam. They were in the same situation against LSU where she didn't fall off the beam, but she touched it, which is counted like a fall. And so if they had a second fall, they're going to have to count it. But Lexi Graber scored it, I think, a 9.925 to finish out on beam. So in that instance, being on the road ended up being an advantage for Alabama. But
okay. Well, Katie, I want to thank you so much for coming here on the show with us. And unfortunately, we're going to end this one little segment with you. But we'll be right back. And thank you so much for listening to the Bama Blend. We'll see you guys in a little bit.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you so much for being on.
The Capstone, 90.7 FM, WVUA.
Hi, this is Eli Gold, the voice of the Crimson Tide, and I love 90.7 The Capstone.
Hey everyone, welcome back. And fun fact, over the course of those two segments, it's been about 3 weeks and we went through a podcast name change. We are now the Tide Pool after a long and drawn up battle with the Alabama University Copyright Department. Not really, but we were informed that the term Bama was copyrighted, so we're now the Tide Pool. And welcome back. Like I said, our first segment was actually recorded February 14th. It is now March 6th, so just a quick disclaimer that some of that might be a little out of date. But Matt, you have some updates on the gymnastics team since that time.
Yes, I actually do. So the last time we recorded this podcast, when we I tried to go into it, the interview was February 14th. Sorry, I'm stumbling over my words here. I'm so excited to talk about gymnastics.
There you go.
Can't get it out.
It's been 3 weeks.
It has indeed.
Bottled up inside.
Not the same without Katie, but.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. She was awesome. All right. So since then, our most recent gymnastics meet was a win over number 12 ranked Kentucky. We were at the time ranked number 9. I don't know what we are currently ranked. Short thought by my part. I apologize. But I do have information about our win over Kentucky.
All right, lay it on us.
So here we go. We won that meet by a score of 197.200 to a score of 196.650. All right, that's a pretty decent win in gymnastics.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
As my knowledge comprehends it, our team closed the night with what has apparently been our best score so far in the floor exercise this season.
Really?
We compiled a score of 49.550. We beat Kentucky, not only in floor exercise, but also in balance beam and vault. So that's a pretty handy victory. Granted, it wasn't
3-1. With the different events. So.
Absolutely, it's a good victory. Also, another fun fact: 49.550 is apparently an excellent score for floor exercise. I've heard that it is easily the hardest event, rather not the hardest, but perhaps the most harshly judged event.
Makes
out
sense.
Of all the events, and it's also got a high degree of difficulty.
Yeah, it has the most kind of going on, I
exactly.
guess.
Exactly. There's so many ways it can go wrong. It's completely freeform as well. Currently, we are 4-3 on the season, but over our last five meets, we are 4-1. We are on a hot streak right now.
Yeah, because we started out 0-2, right?
Yeah, because we had that, we had Oklahoma early in the season. They were like the number one team in the country.
Yeah, so that's inexcusable loss.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
And the last bit of information that I have is that March 7th is senior night. So that's going to be the last, I think, home event for the senior gymnasts. Currently, I think the podcast is going to come out a couple days after that event.
Yeah.
But that is the update that I have for
it's
you guys.
I'm against Georgia, right?
Yes, okay. It is.
Ooh,
against
big
Georgia.
Rivalry.
It's a huge rivalry. Yeah. So,
and if I'm not mistaken, weren't they or aren't they pretty good at gymnastics as well? Mm-hmm. They're one of the teams to beat, especially in the SEC.
Yeah, but the SEC has kind of been dominated by us, Georgia, and LSU. I think has kind of been getting up there lately.
Yes.
Especially
LSU was supposed to be really good.
So
Georgia's currently ranked 10 in women's gymnastics.
Oh, so we were one ahead of them.
Yes, we are. That's right, Georgia.
Okay, so moving on, Josh, we kind of talked about it, but they didn't get to hear it. You are the hockey guy. You do play-by-play and stuff for the hockey team. So
I've dabbled.
Would you like to tell us how your dabblings went with the hockey team? Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, my dabblings went pretty well. The team's dabblings did not go as well, really. Oh. They kind of stumbled there late. They played Maryville. Not the Maryville in Tennessee. I thought that we were going to go on a road trip into Tennessee. Turns out it was one in St. Louis. So that was a little interesting. But we had a second series against Maryville for our last home series where we went 1-1. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we lost on senior night and kind of got outplayed all three periods on senior night.
Yeah.
But we played well the night before. It was a really exciting game, 4-3 win. It was tight. The guys played tough, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ended the season like they've done in recent history by going up to Liberty. And if you don't know, Liberty is one of the best club hockey programs in the country.
Really?
They fund it like it is an actual university sport. They have their own rink. It's nuts. The crowd is exciting and all that stuff.
Jeez.
And they were ranked number 2. And over a 2-game series, we were outscored 18-2.
Ooh, okay.
Oh,
so,
man.
I have a couple questions for you. So number one would be, what was their final record on the season? Like, what did they end up going?
Their final record, at least according to the ACHA website,
mm-hmm.
which is a little iffy at times.
Understandable.
Because, you know, club sports aren't really up to date, and you kind of have to rely on the team sending in stats and stuff like that. But according to their website, they went 4-25-1.
Ooh.
And 2 years ago, we went 23-9.
So why the big drop-off?
Yeah, what happened?
That 2017 year, we had a lot of really good leaders on the ice mm-hmm. and in that locker room and stuff, and just they kind of graduated out. One of the players was our first player to go pro. His mm-hmm. name's Pierre Ouellette. He plays for the Knoxville Ice Bears right now in the SPHL.
Ice Bears, that sounds cool.
Yeah, they are
cool. Yeah, why don't we have...
They're really cool. They're the Ice Bears.
What a name, Is their mascot just a giant bear they just shove out on the ice?
Well, the team up in Birmingham's mascot is a bull, and it's just a dude in a bull, with a big bull mascot.
Significantly
head,
less cool.
Yeah, I've got to say.
Well, his name's Toro. He's a nice guy.
Okay.
He's no Big Al.
Don't wear red.
Yeah, don't wear red. But so while that was kind of the last of those guys,
mm-hmm.
and now they've just had a ton of young guys, which if you watched them throughout the year. They flash talent. There's a guy, they call the guy up from the D3 team to play on the D1 team. John Chiarelli, he's really good. Mm-hmm. They've got a sophomore kind of who's the club president, actually, for the D1 team, Kalen Briere, who's the son of former NHL kind of star, Danny Briere. So that's pretty good. We had we honored 5 seniors on senior night, which isn't a lot for the team that we had. So there's a lot of youth.
Yeah. How many people are on a club team?
Well, since we have 2 teams, it kind of varies because you'll get guys to kind of drop in and drop out and move around between the 2 rosters. But I'd say something around 20-ish on each one. You get a couple of scratches, really, because you've got We got four lines of three, and then you got some defensemen, and then you have—you normally suit up two goalies, and then you always have a couple of scratches.
So you kind of mentioned it already, but it is split into two different teams, and I believe you were explaining it to us because it was just the support for it was so popular that so many people wanted to play, but not everyone was good enough to make the team. So is that like the D3 team and the D1 team?
Yeah, the D3 team actually was a good bit better this year, I would say, mainly because the level of competition that they were playing at wasn't, you know, as difficult. Mm-hmm. But they went 10-9-1 on the year.
Okay. Better than 4-20-something and
yeah,
1-3.
Yeah,
4-25-1
is what the D1 finished.
Lord.
Yeah, it was rough. It was a rough year, kind of. But the D3 team is the first year. They're coached by Phil Tesserero, a former Bulls player. Fun fact, if you look, like, Google his name on Google, it'll pull up all of his old fighting videos.
Hey, so, that's my kind of coach.
And he knocked some dudes around, too, so.
What a guy. That's the guy I want right there. That's coach that's going to carry us into the future.
He's a good guy. He seems to get along well with the players and stuff like that, of course. But the D3 team plays a lot of our old SEC rivals in the Division III hockey, like, kind of rankings. Auburn, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Georgia. Arkansas kind of had two teams, but their D1 team folded, and they put on a lot of their D1 guys on that D3 roster.
So they got to be pretty good then.
Yeah, they're like undefeated. They're like the best team in the D3.
Jeez. Yeah.
So,
that makes sense, though.
Yeah, you know.
Reminds me.
If you got D1 athletes playing at D3 level.
It's like when I played high school football, and they had seniors suiting up for JV because they weren't good enough to play on that.
Yeah, so.
Same thing.
That's kind of the D3. Although I did forget, the D3 hockey team has been invited back. So a few years back, the D1 team was at the time playing at the D3 level. That's how we started off. And then we had so much success there that they called us up, kind of, to play at the D1 level, which is a step below playing NCAA, like, official hockey.
Yeah.
So we need to get a little bit more sustained success and then a couple of other things, of course, to go our way for it to make that jump. But when we brought back the Division III team, they've invited us back into the SECHC, which is the Southeastern Conference Hockey Club.
Hey.
Or, yeah, Hockey Conference, something along those lines. But there's a lot of teams in that aren't in the actual, like, in the football SEC, of course, like Middle Tennessee. So stuff like that.
All right.
It's very big, but it's a nice, pretty group of it's a good group of teams to play against. They have a tournament, all that stuff. And there's just kind of those, like, old-fashioned, what is it? They call it old-fashioned hate.
Yeah.
Some of those teams.
Yeah,
know?
It makes sense. Between
good old-fashioned rivalries.
So if a D3 team can get called up, how long do you think a team like Arkansas will last back in D3? I know you said it might be complicated, and I know this is kind of putting you on the spot because I don't know how much you actually know about the Arkansas team, but how long does a team like that get to dominate before they get to call up?
Well, a lot of times it can be an issue not really with the teams or the hockey clubs. Mm-hmm. It could be an issue with, like, funding or just having interest, because it takes a lot of guys to kind of field a hockey team.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, you've got the four lines, you've got defensemen, you've got goalies, and if you don't really have enough for one team, but you kind of have to move them down to the lower level, you're kind of forced sometimes to stay at that level for a little bit. But I know from some talking around with, like, our staff and talking to some of their guys, the players don't really enjoy playing at the D3 level because they're kind of tired of winning 12-0. They want to, like, play a tight game. They want to play good competition, things like that, which I don't blame them. You know, I want to, too.
Yeah. When you're that good, just you want to play your own.
Exactly.
I understand exactly what you're saying.
I imagine that if it were up to the players, they would, of course, already be at the D1 level, but they'd be there as soon as possible.
So. Okay, makes sense.
Which Arkansas has a surprisingly, like, solid hockey fan base. You would not expect it from Arkansas. So.
Of all the states, Arkansas is definitely kind of low on the list that I would expect.
Honestly,
we wouldn't expect Alabama either.
Yeah, I was going to say, most SEC teams, I wouldn't really expect having a big hockey fan base. But like you said, there's the big, like SEC club where they all just kind of want to go and beat each other up for a season. So
I mean, hey, any excuse to fight another SEC team.
Exactly, yeah. So unfortunately, fighting is kind of banned at college level.
Oh,
but, you know, God. Some guys get a little too tough of a takedown, you know, a little pushing and shoving, gloves go flying. They're hockey players. They find a way to kind of...
Oh, no, the gloves came off. I'm just going to hit you anyways. Yeah. Oh, too bad.
Oh, no, your face is hitting my fist.
Yeah. Oh, no, what happened? I can't believe it.
Okay. So with that, I would like to personally transition to adapted athletics and specifically wheelchair basketball.
I'm not opposed. Go ahead.
They also have wheelchair tennis, but this week I want to focus on basketball.
Okay.
So there's two different teams. There's the men and the women's team. We'll start with the men. They have a 21-7 record right now, and they're 5-5 in the SEC. So, five of their seven losses have come from SEC teams.
Okay.
They won the national championship in 2013, 2018, and 2019.
So back to back last year, right?
Yeah. So they're going for the threepeat this year, but they have a couple of losses. Most of them were really close losses, except they lost to Illinois by 28, which was kind of a yikes.
That's a big yikes. That one hurts.
That's an oof.
Yeah.
Interesting tidbit I found while looking at their stats, though, is that they played Auburn three times this year. So they won the first game 63-48, right?
All right.
They won the second game 67-20.
Ooh, wow.
And then they won the third game 65-61. So I just don't know what happened in that second game.
Yeah.
Where they won by 47 points?
Well, they won, the first one by 15, then the second one by 47, and then the next one by 5? Four?
Yeah.
That's wild inconsistency.
You were scaring me. The way you were leading into that, I thought you were going to say that, like, we lost one of those games.
We lost by 56. No. So what?
Not to Auburn.
That's true. Never to Auburn.
But speaking of that, they have their next two games are both March 7th. One is against Illinois, the team that blew us out, the only blowout loss of the year. And then the other one on March 7th is also against Auburn, our fourth meeting of the year. So
why are we playing them four times?
I don't know.
Why not? That's
honestly,
the question you should be asking.
I was on the D1 wheelchair basketball website, and there's just not like a whole bunch of different teams that are on the D1 level. Mm. Like the website has a whole bunch listed, and it has D1 men's listed, but then it also has all the individual teams, and there was like 10 different teams listed. So
interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was just, it's honestly, you were talking about the stats for hockey not being consistent, not being great. Same with adapted athletics, unfortunately. Their website isn't that great, and it's kind of hard to find a lot of information for it, and I think that's why we're here partially, is to spread some of that information.
Are the adapted athletics sports like official university sanctioned sports?
Yeah.
Like, are they NCAA?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
Yeah, and it's through like the adapted athletics stuff. So then for women's wheelchair basketball, they are the 2009, 2010, 2011, 2015, 2017, and 2019 national champions.
Wow.
So
sustained success. That's
they had a three-peat, and then
there.
They won every other year. So I'm just saying it looks like next year's our year, not this one, unfortunately.
Break the cycle, though,
no,
right?
Yeah. No, that's right.
Break the cycle.
We had some. We aren't going to be able to put it out, but we're trying to start a hashtag called hashtag break the cycle.
Yep.
We're going to do it.
Well, to go with that, they are 26-0 on the season right now and 7-0 in the conference. So they have some absolutely ridiculous wins. They beat the University of Florida 78-12. They beat Arizona 68-18 and then 90-17 respectively. And they're actually, fun fact, as of the recording of this, they were playing a game against the University of Arizona, and the last updated score we had was 69-27 with about 9 minutes left. But again, like I said, it's kind of finicky and hard to find the scores until after they're all like sent in.
Yeah.
But it's safe to say that they won that one huge against Arizona.
I feel confident that they held on to that lead.
Yeah, if I don't think that one was exactly slipping out of their hands.
Yeah.
No.
So they also play UT Arlington, University of Texas Arlington, later on the 6th as well. And then they play the University of Illinois on the 7th. They only won one game all year by single digits. So that was against Illinois. They won 59-61. The next closest wins they had were, they had two games by 10 against UT Arlington and then Toronto. And then all their other wins have been by at least 15-20 to In some cases, like 60, you know.
And in some cases, and specifically one case, what is it, 80? Was that the score difference? Was it like, what is
90
it?
90 to 63 is, yeah. Or excuse me, 73, I can't count. That makes me do math on air. Okay, so then some
research that I did. I wanted to look up some of the rules about wheelchair basketball specifically, because it's kind of interesting seeing the difference between wheelchair and normal. So some interesting rule changes that I found is that scoring is the same. There's a three-point line, a free throw, then inside the three-point line is 2 points, and then 1 point for a free throw, and then three for a three-pointer. As far as dribbling the ball, they have to bounce the ball on the ground. You are allowed to pick the ball up and put it in your lap, and then you're allowed 2 pushes on your wheels, and then you either have to pass it, shoot it, or you can dribble again. There's no double dribble. So theoretically, you could dribble once, push twice, dribble once, push twice, all the way down the court.
And that's a fast break.
Yeah, it's just pretty interesting. There is no double dribble, but any more than 2 pushes, and you have to pass it or shoot it or do something with it. There's the same 24-second shot clock. A technical foul, so like 2 free throws and then possession, is assessed if you attempt to lift your legs out of your chair to give yourself an advantage, like tripping people or kicking people, or attempt to lift yourself out of your chair with your arms.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. I mean, that makes sense, I guess. Yes. Yeah, but you just don't really think about
it. It's things that you wouldn't really expect to... I mean, the thought never crosses your mind.
No, yeah.
It's very interesting, and I think it's a pretty good rule, honestly. Like, that's the best way to enforce that, is just give them a tech.
Earlier, also, Matt, when I told you about that, you said something along the lines of, I would have to strap myself to a chair to be able to do that successfully.
If I were to play.
However, in the official rule book, you have to have some sort of physical, like, condition that limits your mobility to play in the official wheelchair basketball league. And it went as far as to say that someone with a temporary disability, such as a broken leg or something like that, is not eligible. It has to be a long-term.
I'd say that makes sense, too, you know? Theoretically, if that weren't a rule, what would have stopped, like, you know, one of our men's basketball guys who had a preseason injury would prevent
have
them
from... Juwan Gary just roll up on a wheelchair.
Yeah, you know, like...
Well, actually, to go with that, too, though, the way that teams are arranged is there's a point value per player. And it's been criticized because it's overly convoluted and confusing, but players are assigned points from 1, 2, 3, 4, and 4.5. And
what? 4.5?
Yes. Yeah, I don't. Okay, don't ask
it
me.
It's exceedingly confusing.
That's why it's faced a lot of criticism.
I can see why. Yeah.
But and it has to do with how limited their mobility is and the type of equipment they're using. Some chairs are better than others.
Yeah.
And the more mobility and the better the chair you get, the higher number you get, and you can't. The lineup on the floor cannot exceed a certain point value. 12 is the number that I believe it is, although it's a little confusing. Like I've said several times now, it's kind of hard to find the official NCAA rules, but 12 was the rules for everything except the Paralympics, which was 14 was the point number. But either way, you have a set limit that you can't exceed, and then so you have to kind of balance your players around the limit.
I mean, it does also, in a way, that makes sense. Like, it would be very difficult to have, like, you know, even teams because every player's, you know, like, disability affects them differently. Yeah. They've adjusted differently to it. So if you've, I mean, some of them are more severe than others too. So there has to be a way to kind of keep it all equal.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's a good idea, but maybe, you know, you could straighten out the points
total.
To,
like 4.5.
4.5 is a little, is a little rough.
Do you round? I don't know what the... Like,
you could have 2 4.5s and then a 3.
Yeah, and then just no other players.
3-on-5 basketball right there.
Well, hey, that almost worked for men's a few years ago.
That is true. So. Colin Sexton, good man.
But so, like, as one would assume, generally from my research, it says that the higher the point number, generally the more rebounds and assists they'll get because they're doing the ball handling and the rebounding because they have more mobility or like a more well-equipped chair for that. And then, but it's just kind of a really interesting system in my mind. And like I said, I do think it needs to be streamlined a little bit, but
there's definitely some wiggle room there that's a little bit like, it's a little odd.
Yeah.
So I have no idea how I would fix that if I were in their position. No. That's just like, that realm of comprehension just eludes me. Like, it's absurd to like think on that kind of level for me.
Like
for us.
Assigning a person a point value based on what they're able to do and what
seems so
your chair comes
it
well.
It seems very subjective. Like, yeah, that's odd. Well, if it's all right with you guys, I'd like to go ahead and transition. There's a little bit of a swimming and diving.
Okay.
So coming up is the NCAA Zone B Diving Championships. Those will be in Athens, Georgia. I believe they will be – I don't remember the exact date that they're going to be on, so I'm not going to say anything. But at the latest event, the Bulldog Invitational that we went to on March 1st, we actually totaled 11 first-place wins and 7 second-place wins.
It's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
I'll take that.
We'll take it. Exactly. Again, this is against Georgia, so –
we like to meet up on Georgia a little bit, huh?
Yeah. This is for Scott Cochran. Sorry, we're not allowed to talk about that, though.
That's hush, hush. All right. So we swept all of the top spots in men's and women's 50 and 100 freestyles.
Jeez.
So that's four different events, to my understanding. That's four different events where we just swept the top spots. We had career bests from several different people in the 50-meter freestyle. Kalia Antoniou had a career best of 22.11 seconds. Colton Stogner had a career best of 19.57 seconds. In the 100-meter breaststroke, Kayla Wong actually set two career bests. In the actual event, she set a career best of 1:09. So it's 1:00.09. And in a time trial, she set a career best again with 59.65 seconds. And the 200-meter backstroke, Morgan Liberto, I apologize if I'm mispronouncing any of these names. In the 200-meter backstroke, she set a career best with a 1:53.48 second time trial. And in the 200-meter freestyle, Cam Auerbach set his own career best with a time of 1:34.32 seconds.
So many career bests.
I know.
It's a career
night. It's a ton. I don't know. Congratulations to all of you who set career best. That's awesome. Keep going. You guys are amazing.
The water was good that day.
Yeah, it was. The water treated us well.
So real quickly before we go, do you guys want to touch on women's basketball?
Because I feel like
a little bit because they've been
just a little bit.
They've been hot the last few weeks.
So. Absolutely. We need to go ahead and hit on that, even for just a minute.
Before their last game, which was in the SEC tournament. They lost, unfortunately. It was in the second round against Georgia. They were on a four-game SEC win streak, which was the largest since 1998 for them. And they actually would have been on a six-game SEC win streak if they hadn't lost by 1 point in overtime by, surprise, surprise, Georgia.
Curse you, Georgia.
75-76. That was 2 games before their streak started.
They got to get us in some sport, I guess.
Yeah, they got to get us somewhere. And unfortunately, it had to be women's basketball, it looks like.
Not the biggest deal. Like, I would have liked a tournament win, but at the same time, it was the winner had to go play South Carolina, who is 30-1 on the season.
Aren't they number one
in women's basketball? So, and they already played Georgia. They won 89-56 against Georgia, the team that beat us. So it is rough seeing us lose in the tournament. But
that one hurts.
Yeah, but when you're a team on the bubble. Like, we were on the bubble watch for the first time since, like, 1999. Like, we had made the tournament something like 8 years in a row. Mm-hmm. Went to the Final Four in 1994, I think. And then, like, in women's basketball, which, you know, don't mean to brag, but I don't see men's getting to the Final Four in the NCAA tournament.
That is true.
According to ESPN's bracketology, actually, we're now in the next four out. So looks like we're NIT bound.
Bubble burst.
Which starts, the selection is March 16th, and the games begin on the 18th. And with that?
Yeah, well, I guess with that, we're going to end on a little bit of a sad note for Alabama Athletics. Bubble most likely burst in women's basketball. But, you know, we'll be here sometime next week Yeah. Or whenever we record our next episode.
Absolutely.
And could be four weeks from now, but you won't know that. You'll just hear the next episode. So my name's Josh Ragsdale.
I'm Tyler Shibish.
I'm Matt Nash.
And you've been listening to The Tide Pool. Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
See y'all next week.
Absolutely.